Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
More people are arrested during the Occupy Portland protests, but Michael Moore gives them a pep talk. Johnson's baby shampoo is chock full of cancer, and peanut butter prices are skyrocketing.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, November 1st, 2011. 10 people were arrested after federal and Portland police moved Occupy Portland demonstrators out of Terry Schrunk Plaza about 4:30 a.m. this morning. Tents erected on the site were removed by police in riot gear, who arrived straddling trucks or SUVs and surrounded the blocks. They were straddling SUVs?
Oh, I was going to go, the park isn't the only thing that shrunk.
I'm just thinking, those are some big-ass and very nimble police, if they are straddling SUVs.
Or ultra-compact cars.
Maybe. Tiny SUVs. 10 people arrested, said Federal Protective Service spokesman Chris Ortman. 9 were cited and released, and a 10th with an outstanding warrant remained in custody. Some activists were carried from the park. The police action went quickly. Within an hour, the park was cleared. A number of people stood on sidewalks during that time, snapping photos and videos and shouting at police, who held them off the streets to allow traffic to pass by. By 6 a.m., most police had left the scene.
It's amazing how the city can really clean something up instantly if it wants to. If it decides something should be gone, let's say Occupy Portland or Hamsterdam, it can just be in the blink of an eye. It can just, as though it were never there.
Is Sam Adams back in town? I guess he is. Because he did...
You mean figuratively?
Well, because he kind of did that thing of like, I'm just leaving town and letting Amanda Fritz handle all of this.
Oh, you mean like is he sort of... Has he re-announced his presence, or has he literally arrived back in Portland?
I have no idea if he's back in Portland or not. It seemed really convenient for him, though, to be out of town, just in case things got out of control.
I thought maybe you meant it in a Mac the Knife kind of way.
Sam Adams is back in town.
Like kicking open the saloon doors and sort of putting his hands on his hips.
That's right. Yeah. Look out, Lottie Lenya.
Okay.
Monday afternoon, many protesters said they were prepared for a confrontation. They said, we have to show them we're going to need to expand and they are not going to be able to shut us down, said demonstrator David, who did not give his last name.
Yeah, that's always wrong, by the way.
I've heard some people say they are allowing us to be here. No, we're here and we're not leaving.
No, I'm afraid.
Is he still there now? I think not.
Afraid you're incorrect, sir.
I think you are mistaken, okay. David, who did not give his last name. Meanwhile, Michael Moore was in town, Did you get that sound?
This is in the Dropbox.
Yes.
Yes, I will have this in about 4 seconds here.
Okay. Mr. Michael Moore, the Occupy Portland protesters, gave a rousing welcome Monday afternoon to popular provocateur Michael Moore.
This is a movement that does not have a spokesperson. We are all spokespeople. You don't have to train these cameras on me because everybody here has a story to tell. This is not a movement. Who's the leader of this thing?
You know, it's got to be a huge headache just to tell that things are going really, really badly when you run a city or a company or a donut shop and you just see Michael Moore arriving. That's just the worst day of your week. Oh, Christ. No. It's like when you used to see Mike Wallace show up on your front porch. Is this your signature on this document? And you go, I don't know, man. I'm going to go drink.
You just put your hand up in front of your face. And
yeah,
just
please don't leave me
my
alone.
My week is ruined. So Michael Moore observed it took years to turn against Vietnam and years to rally for women's rights and that this battle's far from over. He said, they're counting on you and me to go away. They think this is just the latest fad. He asked the crowd how the police were treating them, and the general response was, pretty good. Uh-huh. Take heart, he said. No, there are literally millions that wish they could be here with you in this park. Everybody has a part to play in this, so what you're doing here is absolutely incredible and appreciated by many people. He said he'd been to Occupy Wall Street protests a dozen times in the past 6 weeks, participating as just one of many in the General Assembly. So the reason this has spread is specifically because it is disorganized. The reason this has spread is because it doesn't have a leader. I don't want politicians to co-opt this in any way. We'll tell them what to do and not the other way around. And here's some more.
This is Moore 2.
Yes.
I don't really have much more to say except to bring you greetings from Occupy Wall Street in New York. I told the people in Oakland I was coming up here, and they said to say thank you. They've seen the pictures on the internet of what you've done here. And really, people can't believe it across the country how Portland has done this.
Yes, the Occupy people in Oakland said hello from their ward in the intensive care unit.
I was listening to him do this, and every time he would say something about how the world has its eyes on Portland and that sort of thing, and I just kept thinking that I like Michael Moore, I really do, but it felt like that's what he's doing in every town that he goes to.
You guys are the best crowd we've ever played to here in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Woo!
I just imagine him saying the same thing. I was over in Wall Street, they heard what you're doing here in Austin, and they heard what you're doing here in Okefenokee.
I think that assessment is correct.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
He was there about 5 p.m. last night, and then he popped over to Powell's to sign his book, which
well
is why he's actually here.
Well done, Michael Moore. We appreciate that.
A man dressed as a zombie was arrested yesterday after an anti-coal protest in downtown Portland. Tim Swenson, 27, was arrested by Portland police on suspicion of criminal mischief and disorderly conduct. He was part of an anti-coal protest led by Portland Rising Tide that marched to the Bank of America at 121 Southwest Morrison. Officers found a red substance and pieces of paper stuck to the glass in the lobby, and an employee identified Swenson as the vandal.
Seems wrong to protest against a sedimentary rock.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly,
it's not the coal's fault.
I mean, really, what has a rock ever done to you, sir?
Portland Rising Tide will continue to oppose any coal export terminals in the Northwest and other destructive fossil fuel projects, according to a statement from the organization.
You know, it must be really hard to be carbon. Carbon just gets such a bad rap. Carbon, nobody ever thanks carbon for all the things it does. Nobody ever
Where
thanks.
Where would we be without carbon?
Honestly, nobody ever thanks.
You'd have no pencil.
I would not, in fact, be here.
No, we would not exist.
Nobody ever thanks. I mean, you know, of all the atomic elements, nobody looks and says, carbon, thank ye for making our life possible.
Why don't we have, like, a holiday devoted to celebrating carbon?
Carbon days. That'll be the new thing we use to get everybody in the town. Our tourism dollars will be supported by Carbon Days.
And anti-Wall Street protesters in Tennessee scored a victory Monday when a judge ordered police to stop enforcing new rules aimed at curbing the demonstration. CNN reported that the rules, which were enacted late last week, required protesters to have permits to assemble and placed a curfew that banned the protesters from staying overnight in Legislative Plaza in downtown Nashville, where they've camped out since early October. Nearly 30 of the protesters were arrested outside the plaza on Friday at 3 a.m., and another two dozen or so were arrested the following day. Most received citations for trespassing, although two were cited for public intoxication. Republican Governor Bill Holcomb reportedly signed off on the arrests himself. But the victory may be short-lived. A U.S. district judge issued only a temporary restraining order against the curfew that will remain in effect until November 21st, when there'll be a hearing on the issue.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in this hour, your entertainment news and Science on the March. That is coming up in about 35 minutes. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com and so forth. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on the day via iTunes, you can do that. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionOfNews.com, and you can take it with you on your mobile device if you like. And is it mobile.cascadia.fm? Yes, indeed. That's what you can do. All right, here is Don Taylor.
A man was critically injured after he was stabbed late Monday afternoon in the 800 block of Southwest 10th Avenue in what police described as a stranger-to-stranger attack. Officers dispatched to the stabbing learned the suspect was being followed by a witness and found the man still with a knife at Southwest 9th and Oak. Witnesses had told dispatchers the suspect was a man dressed as a woman in dark clothes with long hair and wearing a baseball cap.
You don't think of that as being one of your stabbier areas?
No.
It's right near a Thai place.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess the fellow was dressed as a woman in dark clothes with long hair wearing a baseball cap. The man ignored the commands of the officers who fired beanbag rounds, then hit the suspect with a taser. The man dropped the knife. Scott Allen Harbin, 49, was arrested and accused of first-degree assault. And I must say, his
is there a mugshot?
There is indeed a mugshot.
Is he an unpleasant-looking man and woman?
Well, we don't really get to see him much as a woman, per se. But, yeah. Okay, you remember the really super creepy guy in Phantasm?
Yes.
From the morgue? Looks kind of like him.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I already don't like him. We'll get this posted in just a second. You'll be able to see this at rickemerson.com/pictures. Because that is right, well, it's right near Billy Galaxy's place.
Oh, yeah.
And it's right, so if you were at Powell's and you were headed on down Burnside and you just took a right one block down, it's right there. It's right by the Golden
Peacock. Perhaps you were seeing Michael Moore sign his book.
It's not that we're saying that that's the case.
And that you get stabbed by a strange transvestite.
Not that we're saying that all of his
who
fans
who looks like
are
the creepy guy in Phantasm.
Felony lawbreakers, that's not necessarily true.
Welcome to Portland.
Does he have a new book out? Oh, he does, doesn't he?
Does.
He has a memoir or something out. He has a bio. It's, what is it called? Troublemaker? Or
yeah.
Something like I saw it the other day, actually.
I knew a moment ago.
Well, because it's sort of...
Here Comes Trouble.
Here Comes Trouble. Because it's sort of... And I should say that I am a Michael Moore fan. I'm a big fan of Michael Moore. But that book sort of just snuck out. I think I saw it when I was looking for a Shel Silverstein book or something, and it's like there was Michael Moore just sitting right there. Not the Michael Moore. No. This is, what's this guy's name? Scott Allen Harbin?
Yes.
You're able to see this at rickemerson.com/pictures or of visual aids for November 1st, 2011. And his name is Scott Allen Harbin. That's how you'll know his mugshot. I myself am waiting to see exactly what this fine member of society looks like so that I can...
You can avoid him like the plague?
So that I can avoid him. And it's loaded Hacksaw Man. I'm right now just waiting. Waiting for the photo of Scott Allen Harbin. It's almost like the universe just deliberately won't...
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, wow. No. Close.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, like...
Andy was dressed as a woman.
Okay. I don't know what he was dressed as, but he may have thought he was dressed as a woman. There's no...
Yeah.
What? No.
No, he's terrifying.
He is... Okay, that's a face I'm going to see, like, not only in my dreams, but all the time.
Now, granted, it was Halloween. Maybe it was his costume.
I hope this is a costume inside a costume. But I hope he's like...
No, that's really his hair and his face, though.
Really?
Right,
that's so sad. That's unfortunate. And little tiny, untrustable, slitty eyes.
Yeah.
That's no... And his face looks like it's been... Okay, I don't think he's a real person. I think he's one of those, like, mimic
things that Mira Sorvino found on the subways, or that sort of human-shaped. First of all, his ears...
Oh, he looks evil.
They don't appear to be finished. It's like somebody molded them sort of like his, I guess, your left, his right ear. Seems like it's not quite done. It's like somebody was forming him out of putty and just sort of said, good enough. And then that nose has been broken many times.
It has.
The hair is no picnic.
Plus, he has that scary, scary thing of being bald completely on top and then having long, luxurious hair cascading from his bald top.
You know what he looks like?
Which is always creepy looking.
He looks like maybe, like, he looks like maybe some creepy, like, he looks like a creepy public defense attorney or maybe some extra from, you know, some minor character from Law and Order. But if then he went wild like the Man of Borneo. You know, like if he just sort of, if he went feral and lived in the woods for 3 years and then came back out.
Yeah, it's too bad he's like apparently crazy and running around stabbing people because you know he could get work on Grimm.
Jesus, yeah, really. Hey, we ought to spread an urban legend that Grimm, that they cast directly from our mugshot portfolio. That they just come to Portland and they look at the Portland mugshots and go, him, and him. Okay, right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that guy's a troll.
He'll live under the bridge. Okay, you can go to rickemerson.com/pictures, and it's visual aids for November 1st. I mean, if it sounds like a thing you really want to see, you can see that at visual aids for November 1st.
If you're feeling a little bit let down, you know, with the day after Halloween, and you want to see something scary.
If you'd like to keep your holiday going,
yeah.
You just you look at that. That's Jesus. Okay, I don't even... The hacksaw guy can't be terrifying at all compared to this. Well, he's... The hacksaw guy's also... Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, he's for next hour. He's the after shot of our taser watch in the next hour, is the hacksaw guy.
Well, thank God it's the after shot. I mean, if he looked like this beforehand, that's... Why even live?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jesus. That's at rickemerson.com/pictures and so forth. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in this hour, your Science on the March, also entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. You can get that at rickemersonshow.com. Where today we will also have is this accurate over here?
No.
Okay.
We definitely have a taser watch and probably have a couple other things.
Awesome. So that is headed your way. And as will the news be, Don, here in just a moment, as soon as I get this to print out.
Okay.
Here is Don Taylor.
Thank you. Sharp increases in peanut butter prices have begun going into effect following one of the worst peanut harvests in decades.
Oh, God, really?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Okay. I have to say that I'm decidedly, if I'd had more advanced, I would have played that. Let me just say this. We eat a lot of peanut butter in my house. We consume, I mean, really, lots and lots of peanut butter. It's really all we eat.
I'm going to go get some tonight, in fact, just to try and beat the...
It's all hard.
I go to Cash and Carry, the wholesale thing, and we actually will buy the 5-pound tub of peanut butter.
Now what?
And then we don't have to buy peanut butter for months.
What sort of it's funny because I was just talking to Lara about going to Cash and Carry the other day. This is before I knew that there was a peanut butter shortage headed our way. What brands of peanut butter do they have there?
Well, this one is, I'm not sure exactly, it comes directly from the Azar Peanut Butter Company, who I believe they provide it to other companies for packaging.
Okay.
So it's a big white tub. A 5-pound tub that says peanut butter, but it's only like, you know, $5 or something. It's way cheap compared to this buying it by the jar at the store, and it tastes just like.
Here's why
it
I ask.
Tastes just like Skippy
because we roll like Adams style at our house.
The old fashioned.
Yeah.
You got to stir it up with the knife kind.
Yeah, I can't do sugar in my peanut butter.
Oh yeah,
that's
no, this is your standard
issue. It's your Jif, your Skippy,
your Jif style.
All right.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Anyway, yes, one of the worst peanut harvests in decade. Kraft will raise prices for its Planters brand peanut butter by 40% starting on Monday.
Jesus.
And ConAgra has instituted increases of more than 20% for its Peter Pan brand that went into effect this month. J.M. Smucker, which makes Jif, will introduce price hikes of around 30% starting Tuesday. Consumers are already seeing these increases reflected at grocery stores. Maria Brous, a spokeswoman for the Publix chain, said the store had already made slight increases in retail prices and expects them to go higher as the costs of goods continue to rise. Dick Roberts, a spokesman for Giant Eagle Grocery Stores, said that, like all retailers, the store is being affected by industry factors on peanut butter pricing. Chris Brand, a spokesman for Giant Food Stores, said the outlook does not look good until next year's crop is harvested and produced. Peanuts usually get harvested in the fall, around September and October. While spokespeople for several grocery chains declined to provide specific pricing figures, the peanut industry is clearly under pressure this year after one of the worst harvests in recent memory. Prices for a ton of runner peanuts, commonly used to make peanut butter, hit nearly $1,200 this month. That's up from just $450 per ton a year ago. Overall, the USDA projects that American peanut production will hit 3.6 billion pounds this year, which is actually down 13% from last year.
And now, color me stupid, but I was just, the only place I know where peanuts come from is Georgia because of Jimmy Carter. So is that, I have no idea where those are. Is that a solely domestic crop, do you think? Or is that the...
I believe it is. I don't know where we grow our peanut butter.
I assume it's like actually, throughout the South.
Actually, the Azar peanut butter that I'm buying, I think it comes from somewhere else. I think it's coming from, I swear to God, it says something like...
A lab at DuPont.
Product of Portugal or something like that.
Well, so, I would imagine any place that's that is like the southern U.S. in terms of climate, which might be like, you know, places in like Central America or something, but maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. Jesus.
But
all
yes,
right.
I'm going to go get my giant jug of peanut butter while we can.
This is how it
I
begins. It begins with peanut butter. And then, I got to tell you.
Next, the circus peanuts.
I am old enough to remember my mom going to the store and. I won't say we were hoarding as such. That was more of a thing my grandfather did. But I remember my parents going to the store after watching the news because there was a thing that was like when there was a huge coffee shortage that swept through.
Yes, and, I remember that.
And that was like a thing that could not happen in our house. Like there could not, we could not not have caffeine. Then as now, if there was no caffeine, life became very, very unpleasant for everyone. And there were beatings all around.
I haven't thought about that in years. Yeah, I remember the same thing because my parents were devotees of the Folgers.
Yeah.
So
we always have
the big red can of Folgers there.
Mountain grown, Don.
And yeah, and I remember a period when we would have like something like five or six cans of Folgers in the pantry because, you know, because you never know. They might actually run out of coffee.
Well, because there was a huge, and it was like some cold snap or something, or something happened in Colombia or some damn place, and it was and so the coffee immediately was up like 80%, and I do remember. This is the only time I think I remember anything like this. I remember two things from that sort of era. I remember the energy shortage where literally, like, my dad going in and buying, like, locking gas caps because people were siphoning gas from cars on our street. Because you would wake up and some jackhole had come and he'd taken the gas out of your car, out of your El Camino. And waiting it, and I have the vague recollection of driving by at least once a gas station that literally had the no gas sign out front, and then going to the supermarket where the coffee shelves were just essentially empty. So, and it, you know, it's not like I grew up destitute or anything, but there's little flashes of things like that that you typically only see, you know, like in either Britain now or disaster films ever.
Well, I remember bonding with my father because we didn't get a lot of happy father-daughter time. Together and bonding with my father when he was like, "So, I got to go get gas for the car. You want to come?"
Kneel the hose.
No, because it was the thing of when they started rationing the gas, and depending on what your license plate number was.
Oh, yeah, so like a lottery or something.
It was like, you know, even numbers could go on some days, and odd numbers could go on other days, and you would go to get gas, and you'd sit in line. You'd sit and wait in line, and it would take like 45 minutes to fill up the car to get gas. And so my dad's like, "Come on, we're going to the gas station." It's like, I guess he was so desperate for anything to distract him that he would actually take me.
It's either you or take a book.
Yeah. All right. I don't feel like reading.
Tell me
a funny story. And that's how I got to where I am today.
Just be grateful there's no car that runs on peanut butter, because then you would be truly and completely hosed.
Oh, my God.
Just beyond. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here is your science on the march for Tuesday, November 1st, 2011. Here is Don Taylor at the science desk.
Researchers have built a tank-like robot that can climb smooth walls with the ease of a gecko scurrying about in the middle of the night. In fact, the robot was inspired by a scientific explanation for what makes geckos' feet so sticky. The robot could find use in applications ranging from inspections of pipes, buildings, and nuclear power plants to search and rescue missions, and of course, to sneaking into your room at night and clinging to the ceiling over your bed and terrifying you.
Thank you.
Its tank-like feet are inspired by the millions of tiny, hair-like toe pads on gecko feet that allow the lizards to scurry up trees, walls, and across ceilings. Previous research explained that tiny topaz accomplished this thanks to what are known as van der Waals forces, very weak attractive forces between molecules. The robot team, led by Jeff Cron at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, Canada, recreated these dry but sticky topaz in the lab using the material polydimethylsiloxane. The end of each hair-like pad contains a mushroom cap shape that is 17 micrometers wide and 10 micrometers high. While van der Waals forces are considered to be relatively weak, the thin, flexible overhang provided by the mushroom cap ensures that the area of contact between the robot and the surface is maximized. By using the gecko-like pads on the robot, the researchers are able to climb even smooth surfaces like glass or plastic, materials that are consistently challenging for robots that use magnets, suction cups, spines, and claws to climb.
It's going
to
be like that horrible robot we discussed yesterday that can shrink itself down and go through a keyhole and then expand to full size on the other side once it's inside your room.
And then it will be able to rebuild itself with foam and climb on any surface.
Rebuild itself out of your bones.
Yes. Considering all the status updating, picture posting, and wall writing that you, Rick Emerson, yes, you do daily on Facebook, now, once you've considered that, multiply that by the social media site's estimated 800 million users, and you can imagine Facebook's computer servers give off a fair share of heat.
Yes.
That's why the Internet Empire announced that they're building their new eco-friendly server farm in Luleå, Sweden, a place where computers can chill literally. The city is within spitting distance of the Arctic Circle and averages 35 degrees Fahrenheit year-round. The cold air will help sustain the air conditioning system in charge of cooling the server farm, which will span 175,000 square feet over three buildings. Wow, I hope Facebook continues to be popular.
I held Facebook on my lap one time, and the heat it gave off was... Seems like that should be funnier than it was. Yeah. Something, something... Nah, there's something there. Yeah. All right.
Even with the Arctic air helping to cut down on the energy bill, cooling a space equivalent to 11 football fields is not cheap. The server farm will cost $75 million a year to operate.
Now, I thought the server... Now, is they have multiple server farms in many, many cities? Because there's one in Hillsborough, I think.
Yeah.
All right. So they're going to... This is going to be... And it's going to be where? Sweden?
Yeah, in Sweden.
Which is apparently just a whole land of glaciers and snow bunnies.
Wow.
I don't know what's there.
When Facebook declines in popularity, as it ultimately will...
It's going to be a big sale.
Yeah.
Be able to get things very cheaply from that company.
Wow. Driver assist technology, like lane departure warnings, have been part of the auto market for about 10 years. Now Ford is introducing a different kind in its 2012 Explorer technology package. The lane keeping system includes a driver alert that detects a potentially sleepy driver by using a windshield-mounted camera to monitor the vehicle's movement along lane markings. If the pattern follows that of a drowsy driver, the system will chime and a coffee cup warning will show up on the dashboard.
As opposed, there should just be a huge, like a Warner Brothers cartoon style hand that comes out and goes poof, 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 right in the face. Just smacks you around behind the wheel. That'd be awesome.
And it'd be really frustrating for people. Maybe it'll just teach people to drive better, too. Because it comes.
Signal! Boom!
I am not sleepy! Yeah. Stupid car, that's just how I drive.
Jerk car.
The lane assist feature works by alerting the driver when they get too close to markings by vibrating the steering wheel. It can also keep the driver in their lane by calculating the necessary steering torque to get back to the center of the lane. While these kinds of features are helpful and intuitive, they shouldn't be relied upon solely. Really?
Yet will.
The best way to avoid dangerous driving situations, Rick Emerson, is to pay attention to how you feel and know whether you are able to focus on the road or not.
I try not to think about how I feel most of the time. Then I just weep all day.
And finally, the frigid waters of the Arctic are home
to... Did you see the friggin' waters of the Arctic?
The friggin' waters of the Arctic are home to near-mythical creatures, sometimes called the unicorns of the sea, for the long ivory tusk that spiral several feet out of the top of their heads. Worldwide, there are about 50 to 80,000 narwhals, as they are more commonly known, with about two-thirds of these summering in the fjords and inlets of Nunavut in northern Canada. Scientists are hoping to learn more
about... What are you talking about?
the friggin' water, frigid waters and the...
They're commonly... What are they
unicorns
called?
Unicorns of the sea.
You said they're commonly known as... And
narwhals.
Then you said a word that I've never heard before.
Narwhals. That's what they're called. Narwhals.
That's not a word.
Yes, it is.
And don't tell me it's a word for narwhal. What is it?
Narwhals.
Hornglau! Brignog!
They're the unicorns of the sea.
Hunkgloob!
Google narwhal.
Thanks. I'm sorry. Wow.
Anyway.
Google narwhal. Attorney at law. Nice to meet you.
Anyway, scientists are hoping to learn more about narwhals through a new effort to track them as they move around the icy waters of northern Canada, as well as more about how declining amounts of sea ice are affecting the creatures. Pete Ewens, an Arctic species specialist for the environmental group WWF Canada, said, "Although we've been working on a better understanding of the narwhal in the past 7 or 8 years, it was only recently that people have figured out how to fit satellite radios to them so we know where they go and what they're eating. So now we have put satellite radios on the unicorns of the sea."
So we've just strapped just like a big console or something
right.
to... I don't even know what this is. What does it look like? Don't tell me. It's got a horn, but so does my car.
It looks kind of like a walrus or a sea cow, only it has a horn coming out of the top of its head.
That's not a thing that exists.
Yeah, it is. I can't believe you've never heard of narwhals.
All right. By the way, okay, I'm looking it up in the Wikipedia right now. The visual aid here in Wikipedia for narwhal is hilarious because they're doing it. They're showing like a size comparison between human and narwhal. You should go to Wikipedia, look up narwhal, okay. Which is N-A-R-W-H-A-L. The visual aid comparison is great because it looks like there's a human stalking, like sneaking up behind to play a prank on, like That's... to tie its shoelaces when it's not looking. Sort of a don't be very quiet. I'm hunting narwhal sort of a thing.
Yeah, they're a whale with teeth, and they have a giant tusk coming out of the front of their face.
Google narwhal.
Google narwhal.
It's fantastic. Oh, it's great.
That was one of the creatures that didn't make it into the Star Wars prequels.
Okay.
So a new project tagged 9 narwhals in Tremblay Sound off the coast of the northern province of Nunavut in August. The scientists restrained the whales, which can weigh up to 3,500 pounds, and fitted them with a satellite radio that has a transmitter mounted with Teflon rods to the blubber near the whale's dorsal area.
That doesn't sound like fun at all.
No, it doesn't sound comfortable. The whole system is no bigger than a BlackBerry cell phone with a little transmitter the length of a pencil that sticks up. When a narwhal comes to surface, the radio unit contacts with the air and activates the signal transmission. The animal's location is then sent via satellite to the researchers. Of the 9 whales fitted with the device, 7 still have trackers that are transmitting information. For the others, the system lightly malfunctioned or fell off, or they just figured out, it's like, come on, get this thing off me. The smarter narwhals are not being followed. So they're trying to figure out where they are, what they're doing, and their position tells you the depth of water over which they're spending the dark days of winter.
By the way, attention to whoever wrote this story. You got to... Right now, just start working on using something other than a BlackBerry for size comparison.
Yeah.
Just FYI. All right, is that the...
Yes.
All right, we're going to be done? No, okay, that's fantastic.
Yes.
Here's your science.
Did you see the picture of the narwhals tusking on the Wikipedia entry? They're like dueling with their tusks.
No, I must have... Hold on, let me just get rid of the science here. Go away. Let's see, where did...
a little further down the page.
Okay. Well, that... Why has no one told me... This creature's existence has been kept a secret from me, I think.
Well, it is the unicorn of the sea. They're very shy and can only be viewed by virgins.
I think it's there's a thing where, like, when I would come into the room, people would quit talking about them because they didn't want me to know.
Don't tell Rick about the narwhals.
All right. So, there you go. Excellent. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia. You can tell... By the way, that I don't know anything and that we can't really ever answer anything or make any issue clearer in any way. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. And coming up after that, I'll be going to the supermarket to elbow people in the throat on my way to the peanut butter aisle. Here is Don Taylor.
Bank of America has bowed to public pressure and will scrap plans to impose new usage fees on customers who use their debit cards to make purchases. The move follows backlash from consumers, investors, and lawmakers who were quick to voice their displeasure with the possibility of new fees. At the time of the original announcement, other major banks were expected to follow B of A's lead when it came to the new fees, but most major U.S. banks thought better of it after watching the reaction to Bank of America's announcement. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney says customers got a chance to weigh in on the issues of fees thanks to the Obama administration's banking reform policy.
Is this...
This is Bank One.
Bank One.
It certainly stands to reason that consumers did not react well to it. And in this case, they had the opportunity to see it for what it was and express their opinion.
Carney says the Obama administration's banking reform policy led to transparency for customers, but it's ultimately the bank that decides what they want to do or not do.
With regard to this, obviously the bank in question speaks for itself in terms of the decisions it made originally to announce the fee and now to withdraw it.
Okay.
So COO David Darnell said, we've listened to our customers very closely over the last few weeks, likely could have avoided hearing it, and recognized their concern with our proposed debit usage fee. Our customers' voices are most important to us. As a result, we are not currently charging the fee and will not be moving forward with any additional plans to do so. And then he added, please, no one else get rid of their account. Please.
Well, and this is just going to be one of those things that they scrap now and that they do like next week when we're not paying attention, when we're distracted by a thing, you know.
Well, they'll just find some other way to charge you $5.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Really, if there's, I mean, that's, they're a patient people. Depending on what it is, that you're complaining about and how loudly you do it, I think that's and I don't think it's a conspiracy. I just think that's the natural inclination of people just to sort of screw you for whatever they can. And so, yeah, like a month from now when we're all distracted by, you know, like, oh, my God, you know, there's only chunky, there's no creamy, then he'll go, yeah, that's great. Meanwhile, there'll be some new default charge that appears in your account that you don't notice that you have to go in and squeal about. So, all right.
A Southwest Ohio pastor has apologized for giving trick-or-treaters comic book-style pamphlets about fearing God. The Hillsborough, Ohio, not Oregon, Times-Gazette reports that at least one parent had complained about a pamphlet titled Mean Mama, in which three children die, one by hanging himself. The Reverend Kenny Kuzar of the Northview Baptist Church said his church was careless, and he deeply apologizes. He says the pamphlet was inappropriate for small children, and his church doesn't preach such scare tactics.
Uh-huh.
He says the church annually gives out religious tracts for Halloween, usually getting a good response. The church's Facebook page indicates 2,200 pamphlets were given out by church members to trick-or-treaters. Parent C.J. Rook said she was shocked what she saw when her 3- and 4-year-old children were given on Thursday night.
Yeah. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for... Cascadia.fm, thank you for joining us. You can also get this program later on the day via a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. And if you have to get up from your desk or your place of work to, go out and face the day or just take a whiz or something, you can also take it with you in your mobile device at Cascadia, mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, so our voices may ring throughout your tiled bathroom at work. Here's Don Taylor.
It could be the ultimate convenience for carnivores, a vending machine that dispenses meat.
Yes.
In what may be Alabama's first ever meat vending machine.
No. Suddenly, yeah. I don't want it.
It's at an Odenville, Alabama store, and the Birmingham, Alabama company that created it has beefy expectations to expand the concept.
Okay, first of all, that's not...
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't really work. That's just jamming a noun into verb form in a way that is illogical and nonsensical.
Right. Well, the Smart Butcher at Birmingham installed the machine last week at Little Market in Odenville. With the push of a button, shoppers can leave with fresh cuts of steak or Conicub sausage. I don't know what that is. Customers can feed $1 or $5 bills into the machine or swipe a credit card and pay $2.49 for pork steaks, $3.99 for an 8-ounce sirloin, or $5.99 for a 12-ounce ribeye. The machine also sells sausages and other meats. Rob Harrison came up with the idea for Smart Butcher on Easter weekend as he drove the back roads through St. Clair County and noticed a meat market in Springfield. He said, I began to think how much overhead there must be just to sell fresh meat. I started thinking how much better it would be to have a machine sell meat in places like that.
This really seems, I guess if it wasn't, where is this at?
This is in Alabama.
If it wasn't from Alabama, I mean, from Alabama it just seems... vaguely off-putting and non-sanitary. If it were anywhere else, it would seem flat-out terrifying. Because this is like where they show Bender at the front, like, ordering just a meat cake or something, and then on the back, there's just old people being shoved into a panel.
Yeah, the guy who's the marketing and retailing guy says, the challenge is to get people to walk up to a vending machine and pay $7 or $8 for a steak in the same way they pay $1 for a Coke. He said, Smart Butcher has access to good quality meats, which would have been a big initial hurdle for the upstart company. But when and if the machines do become popular, more hurdles will arise, he said. The challenge is to keep the machines stocked and up to date. There is a marketing challenge, and there is a logistics challenge. But the guy hopes to expand his brand new company of meat vending machines.
From Odenville.
From Odenville, Alabama.
Okay. Here at Asgard County, Frigg and I decided that... Doesn't matter. Anyway, here's Don Taylor.
The union that represents the Twin Rivers School District in California, police officers, is apologizing for putting something on a T-shirt that puts the department in a bad light. The shirt put out by the Twin Rivers Police Officers Association shows a terrified child behind bars and bears the caption, "You raise 'em, we cage 'em."
Well, it seems like that might just be a reflection of reality.
Yeah. This fellow from the school district said, "We agree it wasn't sending the right message, and it certainly doesn't represent the views and opinions of the men and women who work very hard to protect the children and staff of the Twin Rivers District." He heads the police union. He says the shirt has been off the market for more than a year now. It was an attempt to raise money for fallen officers from other departments. He said it was meant mostly for in-house officers. But then one of Twin Rivers' own officers was shot multiple times, and the T-shirt resurfaced. So people have been wearing them around town, and now it's making the cops look bad. So the police union is trying to get the T-shirts off the street. And officers are worried a bad decision made by the police union months ago will now make their jobs even harder. Said the focus should be that an officer was almost killed, and somehow we're turning this into a T-shirt that was old, and we ourselves had already found to be inappropriate.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. The next time some guy at the office has a great idea for a T-shirt that he wants to screen print and hand out for free for everybody to wear around, just stop and that's a measure three times, cut once kind of a thing. That's always a bad idea.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to bookmark this thing that was sent to me. We'll talk about it next hour because it's creeping me out. So
right.
I'm just going to close this. And it's a cake that looks like a baby. I'll just put it that way. Here's Don Taylor.
Two chemicals considered harmful to babies, speaking of babies, remain in Johnson & Johnson's baby shampoo sold in the U.S. and some other countries, even though the company already makes versions without them, according to an international coalition of health and environmental groups. Now the coalition is urging consumers to boycott Johnson & Johnson baby products until the company agrees to remove the chemicals from its baby products sold around the world, including China and the U.K.
Wait, what are the chemicals?
The chemicals are dioxane and a substance called quaternium 15 that releases formaldehyde.
Sounds harmless enough.
Yeah. Johnson & Johnson said it is reducing or gradually phasing out the chemicals. Lisa Archer, director of the campaign for Safe Cosmetics, says Johnson & Johnson clearly can make safer baby shampoo in all the markets around the world, but it's not doing it. The campaign's new report, titled "Baby's Tub is Still Toxic," is set to be released today. When the group is launching the boycott by its website at safecosmetics.org. The updated report was based on examination of label ingredients for Johnson & Johnson baby products in 13 countries. According to the report obtained by the Associated Press, one of the suspect chemicals, quaternium 15, is a preservative that kills bacteria by releasing formaldehyde. Formaldehyde, used as a disinfection and embalming fluid, was declared a known human carcinogen this past June by the U.S. National Toxicology Program. Quaternium 15 is still an ingredient on Johnson & Johnson's baby shampoo and sold in the U.S., Canada, China, Indonesia, and Australia. The second chemical, dioxane, is considered a likely carcinogen. It's a byproduct of a process for making chemicals more soluble and gentler on the skin.
You know, it's quaternium 15 is where Nostradamus hid all of his most dire prophecies. They're all right there. And it's not a one-way street. It's like China. It's not like they can just dominate and monopolize the market for sending us lethal chemicals to poison children with.
What are they complaining about?
Seriously, you got to import as well. That just goes along.
Give us toys filled with lead. We give you baby shampoo with dioxane.
Exactly. That's just the way it goes. It's called a free market economy. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is 12:44. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Show at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Let's do the entertainment news.
Yes, please.
It's Tuesday, November 1st, 2011.
Vince Neil has struck a deal with the Las Vegas prosecutors that will see him plead guilty to a misdemeanor disorderly conduct charge and pay a $1,000 fine stemming from his arrest for allegedly manhandling a former lady love during an altercation back in March. According to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, in return for the guilty plea, prosecutors have agreed to drop the more serious count of domestic battery against Neil, which could have netted him 6 months in jail. The 50-year-old musician got into this mess after he confronted ex-girlfriend Alicia Jacobs, an erstwhile TV reporter. What does that mean, an erstwhile TV reporter?
That
makes it sound like... That just makes it sound like they're trying to make it sound like she wasn't actually ever a TV reporter.
Well, does it make is the implication that she was a TV reporter until she met Vince Neil, and then he ruined her entire livelihood?
Anyway, he confronted her at a March 24th Hal Sparks gig at the Las Vegas Hilton.
Go figure.
Jacobs told E! News that shortly after their 7-month relationship ended, a drunken Neil stormed into the theater, threatened and screamed profanities at her and her friends, then poked her hard on the shoulder, leaving a bruise. Jacobs reported the incident to security, who in turn informed Vegas PD about the dust-up. The singer was interviewed a few days later and subsequently summoned to court to answer to battery and disorderly conduct
charges. He poked her hard on the shoulder?
He poked her really hard.
I remember the days when Vince Neil would just punch people in the face. This seems like he's getting up there in years.
Well, his attorney, David Chesnoff, was unavailable for comment, but the lawyer told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that, quote, Mr. Neil is sorry that he raised his voice.
So that's... I just saw something the other day. There was like some Vince Neil coming soon to some casino somewhere. Is he coming to Chinook Winds, maybe? I forget where, but it must have been on the highway or something. I saw a billboard that said, you know, and it had some really sad, it was like some depressing slogan about, you know, something about, you know, come for the lobster, stay for Vince Neil or something. It was something terrible. But there was this big, huge photo of Vince Neil, and then it was like at one of the casinos, and it was obviously that thing where it's like the photo from like 20 years ago, that even then like required some airbrushing, and I would imagine some thinning that had to be done on his face. But really, you want to talk about a guy that just really tripped and landed in exactly the right place in his life? Because, you know, in any other existence. In any other world that's not exactly this one, Vince Neil would just be...
He'd just be pumping gas in Fresno.
That's really exactly that. Like, and that's in between stretches in the county cooler on weekends.
After weeks of speculation, Entertainment Weekly confirmed that Jessica Simpson is pregnant with her first child. Simpson, 31, made the announcement on her Twitter feed Monday afternoon. The singer and fashion designer posted a photo of herself in Halloween mummy garb, posing and cradling her growing stomach
don't
area.
Don't want to see that.
It's true. I'm going to be a mummy, she tweeted.
Oh, God.
Yeah. She became engaged to the baby's father, former NFL player Eric Johnson, last November.
Oh, that's why he was trending on Google yesterday.
Ah.
Okay, I couldn't figure out. Every time, and I know I'm not the only one who does this. This is a guy thing. Every time we all search Google Trends together, we guys... But I'll look on Google Trends or like on Twitter or something, and Eric Johnson will be trending. And I always wonder if it's the Avia Musicom guy, and then it never is. It's always this guy that impregnated Jessica Simpson.
Eva Amore, 26, daughter of Susan Sarandon and Italian director Franco Amore, married former Major League Soccer player Kyle Martino, 30, yesterday in Charleston, South Carolina. Both Sarandon and her former partner Tim Robbins, who helped raise Amore, were in attendance, and sister Helen Prejean, who wrote the nonfiction book Dead Man Walking and who Sarandon portrayed in the film, officiated the ceremony, which was followed by a black tie reception. An anesthesia expert testifying for the doctor charged in Michael Jackson death told jurors Friday he believes evidence and test results show the pop superstar gave himself a fatal injection of propofol.
It seems like that would be implausible given the amount of drugs that were in his system, like, all the time.
Yes.
Also, it doesn't seem like anesthetic... Like, that setup is designed, I think, so you can't really just do it yourself. I think that's like you gotta pay someone to pump the gas sort of a thing.
Well, Dr. Paul White said the self-injection theory is the only one supported by the physician's statement to the police and by all the evidence found at Jackson's rented mansion. White said he saw no evidence supporting the prosecution theory that Jackson's doctor, Conrad Murray, was infusing the singer with propofol using an IV. The research said the evidence recovered in Jackson's bedroom was more consistent with the singer receiving the powerful anesthetic through an injection. He said he believes Jackson somehow gave himself a 25-milligram dose of the drug.
Somehow.
Between 11:30 a.m. and noon on June 25th, 2009, when Murray found the singer unresponsive.
And so this is because of the evidence, meaning that there wasn't a note left behind saying, I did it, it was me, I killed him. So therefore, yeah. It had to have been Jackson himself. Okay, all right.
Producer and director Gilbert Cates, who oversaw a record 14 Academy Award ceremonies and founded the Geffen Playhouse in Los Angeles, has died. He was 77. The Directors Guild of America confirmed the death Tuesday. Gates founded the School of Theater, Film, and Television at UCLA and was its dean for 8 years. He also served as president of the Directors Guild of America and on the board of governors of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Gates last produced the Oscar telecast in 2008 when the ceremony was almost sidelined by the Writers Guild strike. His credits also include movies, TV shows, and plays on and off Broadway. He continued to produce and direct plays at the Geffen Playhouse. And weirdly enough, Associated Press fails to mention that he is Phoebe Cates' father. It's actually not in here.
I don't think I actually know who he is. I mean, I know who he is now, but I don't think I would have recognized his name. All right.
The White House Correspondents Association has a host for its 98th annual dinner next April 28th, Jimmy Kimmel. I look forward to being a part of the White House Correspondents Association dinner, the host of the late-night talk show Jimmy Kimmel Live said in a statement. I love dinner.
Okay, that's actually kind of funny.
Traditionally, a star-studded event attended by the President and First Lady, other senior government officials, and members of the press corps, the dinner features a barrage of zingers aimed at those who run the country. It's all for good cause. Proceeds from the dinner go towards scholarships and awards aimed at supporting aspiring journalists and recognizing excellence in the profession. Reuters journalist Karen Bohan, president of the White House Correspondents Association, said, "Jimmy's humor is sophisticated and edgy while appealing to a wide audience. We are thrilled that Jimmy has accepted our invitation to be the featured comedian at our annual dinner."
This is just sort of the anybody but Stephen Colbert again dinner now.
Anybody that won't, like, actually do anything too, like, awkward.
Someone who's not going to make anybody uncomfortable with their humor or jokes in any way.
Well, that's all of the
Is that it? We're that done? That's the entertainment news for
done.
The day? All right, there you go. There's your entertainment news for... There we go.
Wow.
Tuesday, November 1st, going out strong there, 2011. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. And you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Here's Don Taylor.
Three Utah children were injured Monday night when they were struck by cars while trick-or-treating. Jaden Rathbone, 13, is in critical condition after he was struck by a car while trick-or-treating in Uintah. How do you pronounce it?
Uintah?
Okay. Jaden was walking with his stepbrother on a side street at 6600 South and US 89 when he was struck around 9 p.m. The 71-year-old driver just didn't see him, said Lieutenant Matthew Bell of the Weber County Sheriff's Department. We don't suspect anything with the driver at all. From our standpoint, it was an accident. He was taken to an area hospital in critical condition. Another incident, two girls who were trick-or-treating in West Jordan, Utah, were also struck by a vehicle. Sergeant Bruce Shepard of the West Jordan Police Department said a vehicle headed northbound on Cougar Lane struck the girls, resulting in some facial injuries and possibly a few broken bones. They were taken by helicopter to Primary Children's Medical Center. Shepard said the area was dark and the girls were wearing dark clothing. The female driver was taken to an area hospital, and police say she was very shaken up by the incident.
And if you know anything about West Jordan, Utah, you know that probably the first reaction of anybody who works in law enforcement there is just to kind of look up and, you know, and see if anybody noticed that the call came in, and if not, just kind of turn the radio down and go back to doing your crossword puzzle. Just forget you heard all about that.
It looks like President Obama is no longer sneaking cigarettes when no one is looking. The commander-in-chief is tobacco-free, his doctor said Monday, in reporting the results of Obama's second physical since he took office. The two-page report from Dr. Jeffrey Coleman gave the president a strong bill of health, describing him as a physically fit 50-year-old who eats healthy and on occasion drinks alcohol in moderation. The president is in excellent health and is fit for duty, Coleman said. All clinical data indicate he will remain so for the duration of his presidency. It's unclear when Obama officially stopped smoking. As the Guardian newspaper pointed out, when asked if he still smoked back in June of 2009, the president said he was 95% cured, but confessed, quote, "There are times when I mess up."
I would imagine that he became tobacco-free immediately after he looked at his doctor and arched his eyebrow and said, you know, I've got nuclear missiles at my disposal, right? Do we understand one another? That's fantastic. That's great.
He's not smoking.
Michelle comes and talks to you. You know what to say, right? Okay. Are we men or are we men? Okay. That's what I thought.
When he had his last physical in February of last year, his doctor noted he had not yet stopped smoking and had recommended he continue his smoking cessation efforts.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I wonder, it must be really difficult to give the president health advice, especially if it's something, you know, like something he doesn't want to hear. Yeah. Like, you know, to be Clinton's, you know, and just be like, look, you got to quit snogging all the interns. You got to just seriously give it a rest, pal. You got to just knock it off.
You know, I'm president of the free world.
Yeah, I mean,
that was my Clinton impression.
Really?
By the way.
Okay.
Yes.
You made him sound really puffy.
I'm a big fan of the puffy Clinton, sort of like the fat Elvis.
Puffy Clinton is, I gave that girl the puffy Clinton. You don't even know. Anyway. Well, it's like being Kennedy's doctor or something. It's just going to be like, seriously, this is like, you've got hella syphilis. Like, your syphilis has syphilis now. But please, take a week off or something.
Well, it's like with W, you know, having to always have come up with these things. Yes, the doctor made a statement. Yes, he injured himself on the ranch while clearing brush.
Uh-huh.
Yes, he choked on a pretzel. That's why he
fell off
the couch.
He wasn't drunk at all in any way. That never happens.
No, he got that black eye fixing a fence post.
Exactly. You were listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. We got what do we have here? I don't know, like three minutes?
Okay.
Two and a half.
We got some exciting things we can share here. A 9-year-old Florida girl is facing 4 felony charges after she allegedly threw a tantrum yesterday on a school bus, spit on the driver, threw rocks at the bus, and tossed a patio chair at a cop who she warned, I will effing kill you.
How old was she?
9.
Awesome.
The child, a fourth grader at the Royal Palm School in Fort Myers, Florida, was traveling home when the driver told her to stop eating candy on the bus. The girl, quote, became very upset, uh-huh, unquote, and started yelling obscenities at driver Robert Middleton, according to the sheriff's office report. After threatening to strike other children on the bus, the girl jumped off the bus, but not before spitting on the bus driver. She then allegedly started throwing pieces of asphalt at the bus. When a sheriff's deputy arrived on the scene and ordered the child to stop throwing the asphalt, she replied, F you, shut the F up, I will effing kill you.
Seems like somebody's deserving of a home visit now.
After warning that she would hurt him, the child picked up an aluminum patio chair and threw it at the deputy. After blocking the chair with his arm, the cop restrained the child, who then attempted to bite my arm and said, I'm going to kill you, get off of me. The girl was charged with battery on a public school employee, resisting arrest with violence, battery on a law enforcement officer, and throwing a deadly missile into an occupied vehicle. She was released into her parents' custody.
Is there a photograph? Well, they wouldn't probably, because
no, there,
she's 9.
There is actually, I can find this, there is actually a photograph of her with a bar across the eyes.
Okay, because I'd like to know exactly who to avoid. It sounds to me like that may be...
Well, first of all, just avoid the entire state of Florida.
Well, done and done. Also, it seems like there may be... It sounds like that's sort of like Shades of Watchers. Like she's some kind of lab experiment that maybe got mixed in with the other children and they couldn't figure out which one she was. And they go, well, we'll have to wait until she's 9 and then it'll become evident.
Yeah. Right. It's like she's fine. Just, you know, don't feed her after midnight.
Yeah, don't look
her
in the eye.
Don't get
her
wet. Don't ever try to take away her candy.
Seriously. And then... And that she just found chunks of asphalt or maybe just pulled up pieces of the sidewalk, it sounds like, and then hurled them at the bus driver. That is, you've either done something really, really wrong or really, really right with your daughter. If she's deciding that she does have a strong sense of self. We'll have to give her that. That's a girl with spunk and an independent streak.
Indeed. She's a go-getter.
We should say at this point that we're about to end this exciting hour of the program, after which we'll have the Rick Emerson radio program next hour at rickemersonshow.com. That is next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Fantastic. Thank you for joining us for another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high over the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At News Desk, Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kinnikoa. As always, we thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionofNews.com. We will see you again tomorrow, that is Wednesday, for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Tuesday, won't you?